I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. We're efforting George Wallace Jr. Had this all set up, and I guess we're up. Looks like we got him here. But he'll be joining us here in just a minute on the program. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. Still a couple of the programs. State House Education Trust Fund Chairman Danny Garrett will be with us, so please make sure that you stay tuned for that. Joining us now, I think we got him on the line, the son of the former governor of Alabama, but also served in state government at a number of levels. I got to know him a little bit when he ran for lieutenant governor, but George Wallace Jr. joins us on the line. George, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Doing well. Hope you're well.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. We do appreciate it. I want to get you on. 105th birthday coming up, and I saw there's a documentary. Talk about this a little bit. And this seems to be like kind of an ongoing thing where you really have gone out of your way to try to emphasize some of the good things that your father had done and how he really tried to apologize or tried to make up for the past. It gets played up like where he is like the centerpiece of history for a lot of the institutional left right now when it comes to like these topics of racism.
Well, yes, I think the special focuses on his entire life and his entire journey early on in his career. And during that era, he was for segregation. He had been taught as a child, as archaic and antiquated as it sounds to us today, that segregation was in the best interest of both races. He believed that without hate, ill will, or malice in his heart, as most people of the South did, some exceptions, but most did. But over time, his conscience took a toll on that belief, and he realized he had been wrong. And so he worked to make amends. He went to Dr. King's church one Sunday in the late 70s, one Sunday night, unannounced, and asked if he could speak to the congregation, at which time he told them he had been wrong and asked for their forgiveness. And they knew he was sincere and genuine, and 90% of black citizens of Alabama voted for him in 1982 during his last race for governor. So his journey, Jeff, is one we all took. He didn't take it alone. The country took it. It was a different era, and it's difficult, if not impossible, to judge standards of today by that era, but he worked to get it right, and I think he did. It's a wonderful story, really, about redemption and reconciliation and coming together, and I've recently written a book about that chronicles all of that. And in many ways, his life was so inspiring in terms of trying to bring us together that I think, given the racial divide that I see today, and I think your listeners do as well, it could be one that we should all heed, frankly.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. And I was thinking about this the other day. It's reason, there was like a documentary on Big Jim Folsom and how he was sort of an outsider, kind of rejected by some of the establishment. And you know, every era has their establishment political class. Where did your father fall in line and sort of what was he perceived to be? Now, I know later on he definitely was probably one of the most like powerful political figures in Alabama for sure. But when he was coming along, was he really accepted by the in crowd in Montgomery?
Was he what, Jeff?
Accepted. Was he kind of part of the mix, or was he always this outsider that maybe some others have tried to make him out to be?
I don't think so. He worked well with the Folsom administration. And at one point, he was writing speeches for Governor Folsom early on in Governor Folsom's career My father was a populist, and some suggest that he was a liberal back in the day based upon his progressive ideas to help trade schools and other things like that. But he, matter of fact, most people don't know, not many know at all, that when he was in the legislature, he was appointed to the Board of Trustees of Tuskegee University. That was something that he wanted, and Governor Folsom appointed him. But I think he was a populist, and he was well accepted among the folks in Montgomery. He was a leader in the legislature, and he and Governor Folsom had some differences later in their careers, but I think they came together later and were friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something else. Like, when you go around the state, you really see his fingerprints on a lot of things, but you mentioned the trade schools. The two-year college system really came online during his tenure as governor, right?
Well, they did. He in the legislature, introduced legislation that started the two-year schools, junior colleges, and trade schools at the time they were called. And then later as governor, he made sure many more were built. And they're really a string of pearls around our neck when you think about the needs that they fulfilled over the years. And it's a very progressive idea and needed at the time. He heard his father and grandfather talk about the need for education when he was a young boy, and that affected him deeply. And so he carried that with him. And when he was elected to the legislature and later governor, he advocated those and had those built.
Tell me this, and I've been hearing this all my life, George, and I don't know if this is mythology or the – when I was growing up in the 80s, you would get to Birmingham and the interstates were not finished. And some people have always suggested that the reason why was because those places where the interstate were finished was because they didn't vote for your father. Was there any truth to that?
No, I've heard that over the years, like I've heard many other myths about my father that weren't true. But, I had asked him about that before, and he said, certainly not. I wouldn't have allowed any political considerations to hamper the building of interstates for our folks. So that was his sense about it. So I don't know where that came from. Normally these things come from your political enemies, which he had many, of course.
Well, he never did well. It's like Mountain Brook and places like that never went for your father. And, I mean, I don't know. Was that like a... What was the problem there, you think?
I think that he was just such a populist that he was, for the average working person, and anything that would benefit them, they needed help more than folks, as you say, in Mount Brook. But I think that there came the rub. He didn't come out of the clique. He didn't come out of the group that was, polished to be running for governor. He came out of South Alabama out of nowhere, and that he just wasn't one of them, so to speak. Although over time he had many friends in Mount Brook and many supporters in Mount Brook that many of them I know today, so he began to transcend that largely.
He was like a populist, and I don't think people really don't really understand populism of that era, but it wasn't like he was this doctrinaire right winger by any stretch. I mean, he was pro union, right? I mean, he was very much blue collar. That was his brand.
He was, you say, pro union?
Yeah.
At one time he was. They believed they had a place in our country for helping folks with wages and benefits and so on. And there was certainly a time when that was needed. And possibly some today, but in many respects, some of the unions got out of hand, it seemed like to me, and asking too much from the businesses they were working for, not finding that even balance. But his ideas really, interestingly enough, took hold in terms of his populist beliefs and working for the average working person when he ran for president. And many writers, Paul Greenberg, David Broder, George Will, and others have written that he was truly the grandfather of the modern conservative movement prior to Ronald Reagan. And he was very proud of that in his later years when he would talk about it.
Well, it's this brand of populism that I don't know. It wasn't necessarily like a European style populism or anything like that, or Latin America even, but just sort of American populism that you see come up from time to time. And I guess like more recently, Donald Trump, obviously, but before that, like the Tea Parties and things like that, where it's not, it's more, it seems to be more of the heartbeat of the country. That seemed to be where he was. And like, I see this even like when he ran for president, and like my grandparents or whatever, they were Wallace people. And yeah. I think there's, I mean, the racist stuff is what it is, but it's much bigger than that.
Well, it is. I think what you're suggesting is the values he took that he advocated in Michigan in 72, for example, when he won every county in that presidential primary in 72, and he won every county in the state of Florida. And Florida's not a southern state, neither is Michigan. That's when the real leaders of the Democratic Party realized that he had tapped into something that was affecting people and moving people. The values that he brought forth from his upbringing in South Alabama of hard work and faith and goodness and love of our country and patriotism, all those things that seem so out of date to many today, and that's sad. But those are the things that he talked about when I was with him that had the crowds going crazy like Donald Trump had. The average working person wants to be remembered and thought about in terms of policy, and that's what he did, and that's why he was winning in 72 until he was taken out of the race. And he said at the Democratic convention in 72, he said, when George McGovern was nominated, he said, if you nominate this candidate and this platform, it will lose by the greatest majority in the history of the Democratic Party, which is exactly what happened. But I think a lot of what he advocated back then rings true today. And thank goodness it does.
What do you think we'll ever see something like that? I mean, I guess we're seeing it with Trump a little bit, but let's kind of rewind it a little. The state of Alabama in electing its politicians, you don't have these real populist moments in the state like you used to, where a Folsom or a Wallace emerge, right? It seems very, and it's always been like a one-party state. Just now it's Republican instead of Democrat. But, like, do you ever feel like when you watch what's going on in the state that we're kind of due for this moment again at some point?
Well, it was a different era, and you had different ways of appealing to people. Technology is really robbed us of much of the beauty and the Americana of the political rallies with the country music stars and all that I grew up with. But it's all very generic, it seems to me. I don't see a lot of spark among the politicians like I used to. Maybe that's because I've gotten old, but I just don't see it. We have good people serving, of course, for the right things. But the personalities back then seemed to be a little more interesting to me.
It does seem very cookie cutter, and everything is maybe different now that you don't do the retail politics as much as you once had, where you're like actually there in person talking to people, giving speeches, feeding off the crowd. Everything seems kind of made for TV.
Well, it's made for TV. It's the way it was back in the day, 58, 62, and Mother's Race in 66, you had five or six rallies a day. The country music stars would start it, and then dad or mother would speak, and then they'd move to the next town to get ready to set up again to do the same thing. And you had some TV and some radio, a lot of yard signs, a lot of signs along the interstate, still in two-lane roads, we still have some of that. But it was a richer, a richer mix of politics and people. You saw people. After you spoke, you went through the town, shook hands with everyone. And that's how I was raised. And difficult to do that today with so much TV. These campaigns these days, it's just how much money you can raise to get on television. That's the powerful thing, or social media. So for everything won, I guess it's something lost.
We'll wrap it up on this. Our mutual friend David Asbell texting me this, that, and I didn't know this, that you used to open for Hank Williams Jr. So this would have been kind of when he was maybe not as well known, or before he maybe is the household name that he is today.
Well, this was 1973. I went on a couple of his tours, his opening, and we became great friends. And this was before he fell down the mountain. And at this point, he was having big crowds. He was playing mostly his dad's songs. But he used to lament to me that he really wanted to play his own music. And after he fell down the mountain, and nearly Ajax Mountain in Montana nearly died, he decided, you know, life's not a trial run. I'm going to play some of my own music. And the rest is history. And I'm very proud of him. We used to sit in the back of the bus and play our guitars. And I think he felt he had a lot in common with me since we were sons of famous men. And I appreciate his friendship. Proud of him.
I mean, it really is. There's a distinction there between his father's music and his music. Clear distinction between the two of them.
What, Jeff?
I said there is a clear distinction between the two of them, his father and him, and the music. And it may be just a matter of the eras they came up in, but they're not really similar at all, are they?
Well, a bit different. I think my father actually saw Hank Williams play back in the late 40s. I went to one of his concerts, I believe, a long time ago. But Hank's mother, Audrey, and I were great friends. She was great friends of my father as well. And I'm very proud of Hank. He's done a great job with his writing and his music.
George, we'll wrap it up there. We got to get to a break. But thanks for hopping on and talking about your father. It was his 105th birthday is upon us.
Well, Jeff, you're welcome. If anyone's interested in my book, I've written an interesting book revealing in many respects about my dad's journey. They go to our website, governorgeorgewallace.com. I think they'll find the pages on their website very interesting. Or go to Amazon.com and just put George Wallace in. I think they'll find it. I think your listeners will find the book interesting.
Yeah, I'll get that book. It's readily available. George, like I said, thanks for making time for us, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. Enjoyed it.
Thanks. All right. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show, 1FM Talk, 106.5. Know when to walk away.